The pandemic gave Beppe Severnini time to think about the distinct ways people in Italy look at life and one another. He shares a few of those insights in just a bit. And we'll look into visiting the charming smaller cities of the Czech Republic. Let's open today's Travel with Rick Steves on the other side of the world in Indonesia with journalist Elizabeth Pisani. For over three decades, she's looked into its crowded cities and remote backwaters as an epidemiologist, and to see what unites it, as she puts it, into an improbable nation. She writes about her encounters in Indonesia, etc. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Elizabeth, when you think about Indonesia, you think of, at least I think of, the cliches, you know, shadow puppets, gamelan music, batik, fabrics. Do we find that when we travel in Indonesia still to this day?
Funny you should say that, because every single one of those cliches that you've pulled out there describes Java. And Java is one out of 13,500 and some islands. It's one of the larger ones. It's the sixth largest island, but it's only 7% of the total land mass. Now, it squeezes in two-thirds of all of the nation's people, and that makes it culturally quite dominant. But in fact, there's a lot of very, very, very different things going on in different parts of the country. Now, I've lived in and out of Indonesia for 25 years. And when I went back with the prospect of trying to sum it all up and write a book about it, I decided that I was going to do a great counterclockwise circle around the country and not actually go to Java until last. And I did that deliberately because I wanted to sort of not be, in a way, infected by those dominant images, those cliched images. And I spent, I suppose, a year before I got to Java on cargo boats and motorbikes and, you know, buses with chickens and, you know, on my lap and all of this. And in all of that time, I never came across wayang puppets, the shadow puppets, once. No one ever mentioned them. And I thought, well, maybe this is also a sign of the times. Maybe those things, you know, in the internet age, in the television age, Indonesians are huge Facebook fans. Jakarta tweets more than any city on the planet. They're quite plugged into modern culture. Maybe all of that shadow puppets, and it's just a thing of the past. And then I got to Java, and it's not at all a thing of the past. It's still very dominant there as a set of images. People tell jokes about politicians that compare them to figures from the shadow puppets, from the wayang plays, and etc. So it's funny how many of our dominant images as foreigners of Indonesia come just from that one island.
Elizabeth, it is interesting when you travel, especially around the developing world, how the modern age has overtaken the big cities, but a lot of the traditions and the vivid diversity survives just as beautifully as ever in the far reaches of those countries. One of my most vivid memories of being in Indonesia, Java specifically, is taking the cattle car train from Jakarta down to Bandung. And I was at least a head taller than everybody on the car. It was standing room only, and it was like as many people physically as you could fit into those train cars. And when people realized there was a tall blonde guy from the United States on the train, everybody had to flow by me just to check me out and see who was on this train. Would you still have that kind of adventure when you get off the beaten path in a place like Java?
Yes, and much, much more so when you get off the beaten path in other islands. So I am not tall and I am not blonde. I'm actually, after a couple of months on the road, I get almost Indonesian looking. I'm short and rather dark. But even then, just your habits are a source of great excitement to people. So I've stayed in villages where the whole village, bar none, grannies, aunties, six-year-olds, babies, all come in to watch me have my breakfast. Hmm. And the thing that's of interest is that I'm drinking empty coffee, kopi kosong, empty coffee, which means coffee with no sugar. No one can believe it. So everyone has to come
coffee
and have it.
How could you?
Exactly. Everyone comes to watch and you think, oh, my, 6 a.m. is not my best time of day.
What I like about your book is you talk not about the famous sites. There's, you know, Yogyakarta and a few things you got to do, but basically it's getting into the culture. You talk about sticky culture. What do you mean by sticky culture?
It's a phrase that comes from Indonesian itself. They use that word kental, which means sticky in the way that syrup, when it's been boiled down, is sticky. You get sucked into it, but in an embracing sort of way. And I think that there's really a tension at the moment between old cultural traditions and the modern world, because a lot of the cultural traditions are really quite limiting for people. If your grandmother dies in some parts of the country, or your husband or your daughter, daughter or whatever, you have to have a funeral that will lead to the slaughter of several dozen animals, each of which costs you, you know, the equivalent of half a year's salary. And so people have to drop out of school, people have to give up opportunities for starting a new business or investing because they have a cultural obligation to slaughter buffalo for the funeral. So there are really good things about the sticky cultures. They maintain a sense of community. It's a very, very strong sense of helping one another. No one ever falls through the cracks. But there's a downside to that too. Mm-hmm.
Elizabeth Pisani has reported from China, India, and Southeast Asia. She's also trained as an epidemiologist, consulted governments on health policy, and hosted a TED Talk on global HIV prevention strategies. She joins us today from the Travel with Rick Steves archives. Elizabeth writes about her years of island hopping in what she calls the improbable nation of Indonesia. Her book is Indonesia, Etc. You can read her postings from the early months of the COVID pandemic in Indonesia at indonesiaetc.com. Elizabeth, when you're thinking about Indonesia, to me, it's the people that really you come home with memories of, vivid memories of. You call them in your book the most hospitable people you've encountered, and you write beautifully about the different people you met. You connected with a farmer.
You can't not connect with people in Indonesia. They jump on you, as you said, out of curiosity and out of sheer joy of discovery of other peoples. And I think that comes down partly to the country's past as a series of trading posts. But a farmer, how do you get into a farmer's life? Well, you're walking through the paddy fields and you hear this. You think, what kind of a noise is that? And it's rattling of cans. So the farmers have built these systems where they have a bunch of old tin cans filled with rocks hanging off bamboo poles, which they can tug simultaneously by pulling on a string to scare the birds. And so you realize that this is a huge amount of effort. You're in the rice field anyway, so you start rattling cans. And the next thing you know, you're staying with their family for 2 weeks. It happens all the time.
Now, are these rented or just you're a guest? Because I stayed in Losman. Losman is an established kind of bed and breakfast system in the countryside, isn't it?
Yeah. No, this is just...
Just you're part of the family.
Yeah, part of the family. Yeah. Of course, you know, I always leave a contribution and obviously as it's polite to do that. But no, this is genuinely... Oh, we've never had a foreigner staying before. That will be interesting, you know.
How about nomads? You encountered nomads in Indonesia.
The nomad populations are, we're talking about hunter-gatherers in the forests, and those populations are shrinking very, very rapidly. There are very few left, partly because the forests are shrinking so rapidly. And yet, those that still exist have an amazing life. So we, one of the gentlemen from the nomadic tribes, we went out hunting for dinner, and we went frog hunting in the river. And he was... Mishak was hunting frogs with the backside of a machete. So using the handle of a machete, holding the blade and thumping them over the head with the handle of his machete.
You know, I want to stress, you don't need a special permission or a guide or a license to do this. Anybody with an adventurous spirit can go to Indonesia and have the experiences you're having if they're willing to get out there and meet people. Wouldn't you say that's true? It's not risky.
I would say that's true. I would say you need a few words of Indonesian. It's a relatively easy language to learn and very well worth the effort. And a very few words go a very long way.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Elizabeth Pisani. Her book's called Indonesia, Etc. Our phone number is 877-333-RICK. And Dennis is calling in from Juneau up in Alaska. Dennis, thanks for your call.
Hi. Actually, I was curious. I was interested in gamelan music, and then I saw a documentary on public TV about something called a water pimple festival. I was wondering if those still exist and if it's possible to go see those.
Gamelan is definitely very, very much alive and well. And there are various festivals, particularly in Central Java and in Bali, that concentrate on gamelan. But almost certainly the answer is yes. And I would encourage you to go and explore.
You know, Ubud in the center of Bali has gamelan concerts for the visitors. And I found them just to be fascinating.
All right. Thank you.
So the majority of the people in Indonesia are Muslim. We're talking a couple hundred million people. But generally, people are committed to the notion of separation of mosque and state, and modern Indonesia is a pluralistic secular democracy?
Yes, much more than separation of mosque and state. They're committed to the idea of freedom of religion. You've got to have a religion, but as long as you are, you know, a good God-abiding people, no one really cares who your God is.
If you had 2 weeks and you wanted a dose of three different or four different areas, what would you do for a first look at Indonesia?
I think it's hard to avoid Java as a first look because it's such an important influence on the culture of the rest of the country, and it's extremely beautiful, and it's also the easiest traveling because there's very good infrastructure and large numbers of tourist facilities and people who speak English. I would encourage people to head east slightly, so beyond Bali to maybe Flores Island, which has more diversity both geographically and culturally, but is still not so far off the beaten path that you would find yourself in difficulties.
For instance, you could fly into Jakarta. You'd probably want to go to Yogyakarta just for the ancient site. And from there, you could actually fly over to Bali, do Bali and finish with Flores. Would that be two exciting weeks?
That would be two very packed weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever you expect to do, in general, halve it, unless someone's organizing it very well for you. Yeah. One of the most beautiful ways, if you can afford to be introduced to Indonesia, is on a liveaboard boat. So some of the old Bugis sailing schooners have been refitted as sort of luxury cruisers, and you can go from Bali eastwards through the Komodo National Park and to the eastern reaches of Flores on those boats, and that's a very beautiful and very comfortable way to be introduced.
And I would imagine it's nice to know a few of the polite words in Bahasa Indonesia. That's the language, right? Bahasa Indonesia?
That's correct. Terima kasih is thank you, and selamat jalan literally means have a good journey.
Elizabeth Pisani, thank you so much, and best wishes with your book, Indonesia, etc.
Thank you. Terima kasih, Pak.
We have web links to Elizabeth Pisani's work with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll explore the smaller towns of the Czech Republic in a bit. But first, a prominent Italian journalist has been thinking about what it really means to be Italian. It's Travel with Rick Steves.